My name is Ang Chen, and my talk is Detecting Covert Timing Channels with Time Determinist Replay. This is work done with my advisor, Andreas Eberlin, and several other authors from University of Pennsylvania and Georgetown University. Suppose you have a machine hosting highly confidential data, for instance, launch code for a bomb. Unfortunately, your machine has been compromised. And now, the compromised software is trying to leak such information to the attacker. How could he achieve this? One option would be to send the bits in an error packet. But we've gotten pretty good at detecting such overt data leaks with the use of firewalls, DPIs, and whatnot. So a more sneaky way would be to send those bits in forms of a series of innocent packets, and then to encode the bits in the timing of those packets. For instance, a big gap could mean a 0 or a 1, and a small gap could mean the other bit. And this is known as a covert timing channel, and we want to detect this. It's not easy to build a general detector for all covert timing channels. And existing approaches all look for specific statistical deviations. For instance, if a channel makes big and small gaps, the distribution of the packet gaps will be clearly bimodal. So naturally, you should build a detector that looks for this. However, there's an obvious limitation here, which is that before you build a detector, you really need to know which channel to expect. For instance, if you knew beforehand that a channel makes big and small gaps, then you can build a detector that looks for big and small gaps. However, if a second channel makes a different pattern, then you would need to build a new detector that looks for this specific new pattern. Using a green detector for the red channel usually doesn't work well. Moreover, adversaries can always make new patterns to bypass existing detectors. So the administrator needs to constantly catch up by making even more detectors, which quickly becomes a cat and mouse game. Even worse, if an adversary only moves one packet out of many packets, there will be no very visible statistical deviation. So it's really hopeless for a statistical detector to detect such needles in a haystack. So we look at this problem and we thought, perhaps we've been approaching this in a wrong way. Existing approaches all essentially try to enumerate all possible ways that things could go wrong, and then detect them one by one, which is tedious and instance-specific at best. So rather than doing this, why don't we take the expected behavior and detect any deviation from that? That is, why don't we take the timing, the expected timing of all the events, and compare the observed timing with that one by one? Then if an adversary systematically distorts a batch of packets, we can detect that, even if the pattern is unknown to us, because we are not looking for specific bad patterns. Even if the adversary distorts only one packet out of many packets, we can still detect that because we know the exact timing of all the packets that should have been. So this gives us a powerful advantage over the adversary. Moreover, it patches the problem in such a way that it's targeted at general class of covert timing channels, not its specific instances. However, getting the expected timing is really difficult. We might think, well, why don't we just analyze the code and see how much time it will run? But as the real-time system community have been doing this for quite some time now, and they are looking at a related problem, which is to estimate the upper bound of an execution. But the result is that even that is difficult. Moreover, an upper bound is not enough for our purpose, because we will need the exact timing. Our key insight is that we don't have to analyze the execution of the code. All we have to do is to reproduce it. This is reminiscent of replay systems, which basically works like this. During play, you maintain a lock, and you record all the non-deterministic events into the lock, such as network packets, interrupts, etc. And then, during replay, you would transfer the lock to another computer, and then you inject all the recorded events at exact points during execution, so that the replay behavior will be exactly the same with the play. Now, this almost gets us there, except that deterministic replay systems only reproduce the functional behavior, but not the timing behavior. But we need both for our purpose. That is, what we really need here is time deterministic replay. Suppose for a moment that we already have time deterministic replay. What could we do to detect covert timing channels? If an administrator suspects that a particular execution might contain a channel, what she would do is this. She would take the piece of software that was supposed to be running and its recorded logs, and then she would perform a time deterministic replay, therefore reproducing all the timing of the network packets. Then she would compare the observed timing of the packets with the expected timing one by one. Therefore, a deviation in any single packet can be detected. So, we want to detect covert timing channels, and the challenge here is to reproduce the timing of all the network events. Next, I'm going to show you how to achieve time deterministic replay. We might wonder whether deterministic replay is already close enough to time deterministic replay. To answer this question, we took ZenTT, which is a deterministic replay system for Zen, and recorded how it handled HTTP requests during play and during replay. The x-axis here is the time of packets during play, and the y-axis is the time during replay. If the replay could exactly reproduce the timing, what we would see here would be a straight line on the diagonal. However, this is very different from what we actually saw. Sometimes the replay is slower because the kernel is booting, and sometimes it's faster because it skipped part of the execution. Moreover, what we can see here is that the speed for play and for replay is almost never the same. Of course, this is not ZenTT's fault. ZenTT is a deterministic replay system, but it's not designed for time deterministic replay. They are different for many reasons. For instance, if play and replay induce different cache behaviors, the timing will also be different. The difference could also come from the execution itself. For instance, calling the same system call twice might take different amount of time. We call those factors time noise in our paper. Now, I'm going to focus on only one specific example, but we have proposed techniques to handle each type of the time noise in the paper. Naively, you might think that the cache behavior is highly unpredictable. But since we're replaying everything, the memory access pattern can also be maintained if we are careful. For instance, your program wants to access this particular variable that is placed here in memory during play. Now, before it's brought into the cache, the existing cache line needs to be evicted first. However, the same variable might be placed somewhere else during replay. So this time, it could be brought directly into the cache. Then, apparently, the time it takes to access this variable will not be the same between play and replay. Now, our solution for this is to manage all the memory allocations by ourselves deterministically and to place all the variables at exact same locations during play and during replay, so the memory and cache behavior will be exactly the same. And play and replay can also be affected by the content of the cache, and our solution for this is to carefully flush the cache before play and before replay. As I just said, this is only one specific example of how to handle the time noise that comes from a memory. Indeed, we have identified many other sources of time noise in our paper and proposed techniques to either eliminate or reduce each of them. Since we're running on commodity hardware, we do not have complete control over what it does, so we cannot eliminate all the time noise. But as I'm going to show you very soon, we can reduce the time noise very significantly. So what if we don't use a commodity hardware? What if the hardware itself is deterministic? That is, on such platforms, the same operation will take the same amount of time. People have indeed built such systems, such as Pratt. So suppose we have Pratt, would we be done? Well, no. The problem here is that play and replay are really doing different things. For instance, the play needs to record all the system events into the log. But the replay needs to fetch the events from the log. So naively, an implementation that accesses an integer, just as a very simple example, would look like this. Now, the problem with this code is that during play, it writes to the buffer. And during replay, it reads from the buffer. So those are really different memory access patterns, and they take different branches, which would cause different BTB states. And our solution for this is to carefully align play and replay. So to achieve the same functionality, our code will look like this. On a high level, the play and replay maintain the same memory access pattern, and they don't have to take any branches. Using the proposed techniques, we have built a prototype that achieves time determinist replay. And we call that Sanity. Ideally, we would have liked to convert an existing VMM for a time determinist replay, such as Xen. However, this is quite difficult because existing systems were not designed with time determinism in mind. It's difficult to convert such a system to do something that is not designed for. This is a bit like retrofitting security to an existing system. So we decided to build something from scratch, and we chose Java because it's a simpler virtual machine. Of course, building it from scratch has several limitations. For instance, we can't expect Sanity's performance to match that of a commercial JVMs. Also, we retain the Linux kernel for system service, such as NetworkIO, so that we don't have to write the drivers from scratch. The natural question is how Sanity shields itself from the interference from the kernel. Basically, we bind Sanity to a timed core. And whenever it needs system service, it issues commands to the support core, which will call the kernel on its behalf and then push back the results to the timed core. Of course, this would mean that we need two cores to do the work of one. Okay. Now let's have a look how Sanity could achieve its time determinist replay promise. There are several questions that we are interested in, and indeed, we have evaluated all of them in our paper, and I encourage you to read our paper for more details. But here, I'm only going to talk about three of them. This is the configuration of our system, and we use two benchmarks for our evaluation. SIMARC2 is a computational intensive benchmark, which we have used to evaluate the amount of time noise reduction. And we compare that with Oracle's JVM. We have also used an NFS server so that we could evaluate how well Sanity could align play and replay. SIMARC has five programs. And here, the y-axis shows the time variance across different executions. And we first run it in Oracle's JVM in a dirty environment. Now, what do we mean by a dirty environment? Basically, we have graphics on, and we have other programs running in parallel with the Oracle's JVM. What we can see here is that the timing variance could be as much as 79%. we then try the same thing in a clean environment. Basically, we run it in single user mode with minimum amount of servers running in parallel. We can see that the best number we see here is still 14%. We then took Sanity and run all the programs within Sanity. Here's what we found. The largest timing variation here is only 1.2%, which is orders of magnitude better than the existing JVM. How about play and replay then? As I just mentioned, they are really different logic. So how well could Sanity align play and replay? We run another server while it is serving 30 files of different sizes, and then we replay the execution. The x-axis here is the timing of events during play, and the y-axis is the timing during replay. Basically, a straight line on the diagonal would again mean perfect accuracy. Let's have a look at how Sanity could reproduce the timing. Here's what we found. The largest deviation that we see in this experiment is only 1.9%. It's very close to perfect accuracy, meaning that Sanity aligns play and replay, which were very fundamentally different logic, and they can, Sanity can reproduce the timing with almost perfect accuracy. Now let's have a look at how Sanity could help us detect covert timing channels. We implemented three existing channels from the literature, and we also proposed a new channel, which we call needle in a haystack, which basically only distort the timing of one packet out of 100 packets. So it's really difficult for a statistical detector to detect this. The detector that we have tried are also from the existing literature. Of course, we have proposed a new detector based on Sanity's time determinism. Basically, if the deviation of one single narrow packet is more than the number that we just saw, Sanity would raise an alarm saying that there is a channel. The quality of the detector can be measured in the form of a rock curve. Basically, a detector usually has many knobs that you can turn to trade off between the false positive and true positive rate. So the x-axis here is the false positive rate, and the y is the true positive rate. An upside-down L-shaped curve would mean perfect accuracy. And if a curve moves further to the lower right, it means that the quality is not as good. Moreover, the metric to evaluate a curve would be the area under curve. So we run each channel, and we try each detector against this channel. Here's what we found. For the most naive channel that makes big and small gaps, existing detectors can all detect this with perfect accuracy. This confirms earlier results in another paper. But as the channel gets more sophisticated, we can see that the curves are moving to the lower right. And for our needle in a haystack channel, the existing detectors don't work very well. Now let's have a look at how Sanity could help us detect those channels. For all the channels, Sanity detects them with perfect accuracy, without any false positives, without any false negatives. It even works with perfect accuracy for the needle in a haystack attack. To summarize, we want to detect covert timing channels. And existing detectors all look for specific anomalies. And we have offered a new way of thinking about this problem, which is to compare the observed timing with the expected timing so that the distortion of one single packet can be detected. But for this to work, we need to reproduce the timing of all the events. We have therefore proposed time determinist replay. And we have built a prototype called Sanity that achieves this. Sanity can reduce the time noise very significantly, and it can align play and replay to close to perfect accuracy. Moreover, with sanity's time determinism, we can detect the existing detectors with perfect accuracy, as well as the needle in a haystack channel, which is a very low read channel, also with perfect accuracy. Thank you.
Hi, John Howell, Microsoft Research. First, I really like this problem. I like seeing people attack a problem that is widely considered untenable or hard to solve. So my question is kind of about your scope, which is when we think about practical attacks, a compromise is something that might come in the input stream. So the question is, are you going to carefully reproduce on the second machine the attack on the input stream and then reproduce the timing of the compromised software on both the reference machine and the original and the one that's under test?
So the question is whether we need to use the same input, is that correct?
No, the question is, I mean, your model assumption is that you're going to compare the machine you're suspicious of to a machine with some reference software.
Right.
But if the reason that you're suspicious of the machine is that it might have been compromised by an input that had an attack in it, and you're playing that input into your reference machine, mm-hmm. is it possible that that input could just carry the payload that now you're carefully reproducing the attack on both sides?
Good question. So for the replay, we would have to assume that the implementation of the software is correct. So basically, if you receive an input that carries an attack payload, either the so the reference implementation that you have on the replay system should not be affected by this attack, because we're assuming that is correct. Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
Qianghe from NICTA and the University of New South Wales. Mm-hmm. So in the performance, in the evaluation part, mm-hmm. you saw a little bit of variation in the time replay.
Right.
Do you have any idea about where this comes from?
Right. So as I just showed in the table, since we are doing the experiments on commodity hardware, we do not have complete control over its behavior. So for some sources of the time noise, we can only mitigate them.
Is that because you implemented in JVM?
No, it's not because of the whether we have chosen to go with a JVM or not. Of course, some of the time noise could come with this design decision. For instance, the kernel is still running somewhere else on the system. So if we had built everything from scratch, the time noise should be less. It's true, yeah.
Thanks.
I built Xentity that, you know, the replay engine, which was going fast. So the comment is actually the Xentity was providing the time model as well. And I know maybe you just missed it, but it was quite accurate. It was recording times before injecting every event. And it was because majority of the replay work was done on a separate core. Mm-hmm. There was not that much noise. And it was within like microsecond range, but maybe it would be good enough for you for this work as well.
You mean the replay for Xentity, right?
Yeah, both during recording and replay. Like uh-huh. recorded enough information to provide a high fidelity performance model during replay.
Right. Basically, we use the same piece of software that you. So we are using the same Xentity. And we're doing the same replay, you know. We're doing the same type of replay that you just mentioned. And here are the results that we found. And I think for a determinist replay system, there should be many types of time noise that I just mentioned that would cause the replay to be non-determinist in terms of the time, right?
Yeah, I claim that the noise should be in a microsecond level range. So maybe
okay.
I did something wrong.
I guess that would depend on, you know, the length of the execution, etc. So I think not all execution would be contained by the level of 1 microsecond, right?
One more question.
Gernot Heisel, NICTA and UNSW. Congratulations on succeeding in this heroic attempt to reproduce timing. Mm-hmm. However, I find it difficult to come up with a realistic scenario where you could use this to detect covert timing channels. You're relying on having an identical machine that's trusted to the one that's not trusted to run the complete computation. Why don't you just run it on the trusted machine?
It's true that we require a correct implementation of the software and a machine of the same kind.
Identical machine, right?
Right.
You can buy two different machines with the same product numbers that behave differently at that level.
It's true. It's true. Good question. But I think there are still several practical scenarios that you have identical machine. For instance, if you're an administrator for a network data center, usually you have many machines of the same model, and you can use one of them for your replay system and while deploying others for your data center services.
All right, I think I saw that there were other questions, and the good news is that Angie is going to be around to answer them after all of this. Let's thank him again.